Hello and welcome to another All About Symbian podcast. It's All About Symbian Insight number 4. And I'm Rafe Blanford and I'm here with...
Ewan Spence.
And Steve Litchfield. And one thing I have to say to you guys, where have you guys been? I've been left on my tod in the UK all week. What's been going on?
Well, we've been away in Amsterdam, enjoying the delights of Nokia World. Very much a high-profile, very public, but still very business-to-business conference from the Finnish telecoms giant.
Yeah. Well, so were you skiving off, or was it really worthwhile? What's the lowdown?
Well, we weren't skiving off, Steve. We're working very hard, and we're sorry for leaving you all on your own. But what it was all about, well, Nokia World's a business-to-business conference, but they also made a couple of announcements that are definitely of interest to the end consumer. One that I'd highlight in particular is comes with music, which is going to be available on handsets sometime next year. And it will include a music subscription with the device. So effectively, you'll be getting free music with the comes with music devices. It's a music subscription that's bundled into the cost of the device. Now, music subscriptions are available already, but the difference here is that the music you can keep after your subscription ends. So that's, I think, a fairly radical new approach to selling music, and it'll be very interesting to see how that goes. And I expect the industry to shift more towards that model. And I know Ewan's very keen on music, and I'm sure he'll have some thoughts on this.
Yeah, I mean, as with all of these things, the devil will be in the detail. But because it is such a simple marketing concept, it's all you can listen to for a year. There's not a huge amount of wiggle room. And I'm also pretty sure, and we've seen the reaction on the internet, that the people who are against DRM and the online music being run by the major labels are already going, oh, it's DRM'd, you lose it at the end of the year, which you don't. You won't be able to move it onto another device. Well, you can, because you can re-download the file again onto your PC and then move it to another device. You lose it, everything and all your access and stuff at the end of the year. So it's... I think the one thing is, Nokia were not clear on the details. We had the announcement in the middle of the keynote, and it was pretty much as much as we've got here. It said, this is happening, isn't it nice? And it took a while for the conclusions to sink in and what it would mean for the industry, both the smartphone industry and the music industry. But, you know, the details, for example, will there be a fair use clause? No downloading more than 100 tracks in one day, for example. That still needs to be addressed. And I don't think we'll see those fully addressed until late Q2, just before the service launches next year.
I think that's right. Although I would say that we were told a fair bit about some of the things like the DRM, and the indications were there will be no fair use limits. One person indicated that you could download all 2 million tracks, but pointed out that it would probably take you 5 years to do so. One of the questions I've got for both Steve and Ewan is the comes with music includes DRM. It's based on the Windows Media Play for Sure DRM. It'll later go to Play Ready. But the question is, DRM hasn't got a very popular background in music. So do you think the fact that it's going to be unlimited free downloads, with the fact that you can keep the music at the end, that you'll be able to play it back on both your mobile and PC, will be accepted to the majority of users? Now, I realise the top-end users still aren't going to like DRM, but does this lighten the sort of weight of DRM to the point at which most people are going to go, well, it allows me to do what I want to do, and that's fine by me?
Yeah,
I think it does, yes. I'll go first on this one. I'm quite impressed by this, unlimited, all-you-can-eat model, as in with the early broadband internet services, if you remember, on our desktops. We were all on dial-up and then pay by the minute, then it became pay per month, and now it's just completely ubiquitous. And I think the same thing will happen in terms of online music stores here. My only concern, as you've already mentioned, with the DRM at the end of the year, is the exact ease of moving it onto a new device if you upgrade your device at the end of the year. But I'm sure this is going to be thought of in the detail. Nokia want people to upgrade after all. They want people to buy new handsets. So I'm sure this is going to be worked out. And for the consumer, this is just a fabulous, fabulous model.
Yeah, and just before Ewan jumps in, I think it's worth pointing out that the subscription isn't renewable at the end of the year. You'll then move to the buy per track model, and I don't actually think that's necessarily a bad thing, because people will be able to download their music collection, if you like, and then get used to buying new tracks, which is fairly attractive, but more to the point, they'll may well be tempted to buy another comes with music device in order to get another year of free music. What's important about that is it gives Nokia a chance to sell devices or churn people onto new devices more quickly, and the profit margins on devices for Nokia remain, and for the foreseeable future will be, a lot more than music. So I actually think it's quite a clever strategy of Nokia to encourage sales of devices. There is maybe a problem with lock-on into Nokia devices. Ewan, I know you've got you're dying to get in here, so what do you reckon?
Well, I think first of all, to address the point on when it can move devices, when you get one of the NCU devices that uses comes with music, you'll get a voucher in that box, and that voucher goes to your personal account on the Nokia Music Store. Now, you don't specify a handset there. You just say, you know, you and Spence's account, here's the redemption code, right? You now download for a year. So it's not specifically tied to a device at that level, so you can re-download again. And the other one, in terms of will the customers do take up on that, let's remember that the most popular music store out there, iTunes, already uses DRM, already provides lock-in to the iPods, and people are more than happy to do that. I mean, I've been looking around to try and get some numbers for this, but $650 million worth of tracks in the first 3 months of a year. People are, you know, the edge cases, the people like that will listen to podcasts, that will go out, that are aware of all the Russian websites out there, that can understand BitTorrent, will continue to avoid this on principle. But I think that the people who drive sales, the mass market, I think those people are going to go, so I get to download my music to my PC, I get to put it on my phone, if I lose it, I get to download it again, sign me up.
I agree, absolutely. We'll have some more information on Comes With Music on the site, including some frequently asked questions about device switching and how exactly the DRM works and what are some of the rights for burning onto CD and things like that. But I genuinely think it will change how the music is perceived, and I wouldn't be at all surprised to see some of the other makers of music, portable music devices, follow up on this announcement. Now, it's worth noting that Nokia has just announced this with Universal, one of the four big labels, but I think part of the reasons for announcing it as early is to generate buzz and to encourage some of the other labels to come on board. And I was told by Nokia that they intend to get exactly the same music that's in the music store available with Comes With Music. So I think it could be very exciting to see. In terms of devices, it's not going to be on every device. As with other Nokia services, it'll probably be introduced with one device first of all, and will later spread to other devices depending on how successful it is and what the business model is. It's not going to be a sudden everything music comes with music available on everything, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. But it's great to see Nokia actually innovating in something that's a little bit outside their own field of expertise, I feel. You know, multimedia computers are one thing, but this is taking on music players in a big way, and I'm very encouraged to see Nokia do that.
It certainly strengthens their Ovi play. And you can look at it in another way. Obviously, we don't know what sort of financial recompense is coming out to the labels. I mean, I've been trying to run some numbers here, and I'm coming up with numbers between Universal's going to get between $50 million and $1.1 billion for 2008, 2009.
So a nice big range there, Ewan.
Nice big range, yes. Can't really commit. But, I mean, if you think about it this way, when Nokia licensed Symbian OS, it used to be $10 a handset. It's now down to $4 a handset. You could argue, from a business point of view, that they've got $6 of licensing spare per handset compared to their original business model. So they could quite easily hive off a couple of dollars to Universal, to Sony BMG, to Warner's, and to EMI, and then also to a conglomerate of independent labels. And it wouldn't really have an adverse effect on the price of the phone in terms of cost. But if you wanted to go to the upper bounds, Universal have offered a similar sort of service, this all-you-can-eat service, to other manufacturers in the digital media player space. And at that point, they were doing a license cost of around $4 or $5 a month.
Yes, indeed. They're going to launch that themselves, I think, as a separate service called Total Music. Although one would assume when it's integrated into a Nokia offering, that price will come down a little just because of economies of scale.
Indeed, yeah. So I mean, there's a fair range of the prices in there, but I think that's the sort of rough area that Nokia are looking to pay for, maybe about €3 per label.
I mean, I agree. I think it's probably going to end up at something like a cost of maybe an extra £25 to £30 on the device, or maybe a little bit more than that. But actually, a question for Steve. If you were getting free unlimited music for a year with your device, would you accept an extra £50 on the top of the device cost?
You know, I was going to ask you two guys that, not being at Nokia World, I was going to say, what's the overhead on the actual price of the handset? What's the jack-up price because of this service?
Not surprisingly, Nokia weren't actually disclosing those because it's sensitive business details. So at this point, we can only guess.
Yeah, I think something in the order of $50, around £25, I think that's quite reasonable and not a problem for a year's listening to all my favourite bands, stuff I've never been able to get track in the shops or new bands I discover, and just downloading all the stuff by them, all within this £25 for the first year. I think that's a tremendous deal.
And of course, with the UK market, it's very rare, certainly for UK and also in Europe, to pay full price for a handset in any case. Which also leads to the question, what's this going to do to things like Vodafone's music store, to Three's streaming music service? It really does put the cat amongst the pigeons, and I'm sure it's a topic we will be returning to over and over again.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll come back to this. Just staying with Nokia World for a little bit longer, the other thing we heard, some more details about Ovi, and although this is a bit further away, I think it's probably worth just summarising some of those for the listeners. You and I mean, what did you take away from it, from the sort of three-way PC, mobile, and web approach that we heard about?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just flipping over to my notes here, and what's great to see is, I mean, Ovi was originally announced at the GoPlay event at the end of August, and we've seen that principle now built up quite nicely. So Nokia Maps is already firmly established into that sort of pantheon of tools, where music is launched as the beta store in the UK and will continue to evolve over the next few months and into Q2 and Q3 next year. The third strand, the N-Gage gaming, is going to come in the next week or so. It should be here for the Christmas market. The next two elements in Ovi's plan of action, as it were, have been announced. The first one was Ovi.com, which is the main website. It, to me, it looked like a sort of MySpace, Facebook. You got to put your friends in there. You got your media streams coming in, your pictures, your videos, your news articles. And obviously, it's not one bit of the service. It's the glue in between. It is one bit of the service. It's not the entire service. My apologies. It's the glue that's going to hold all the other bits together. So, and it's coming in at the sort of middle stage. The fourth stage is the PC component to Ovi, which allows you to pull off your media, archive it, timeline it. Basically, to me, that looked like LifeBlog version 2.
It was kind of the offline version of Ovi.com, wasn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. But it allows you to do that back up on your PC and explore as well. I think the one problem we're going to have with Ovi is rather much like the problem we had changing between Siri 60 and S60. It was, how do you pronounce Ovi? 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 Ivi? Avi? Ovi? I mean, it's...
And I think Steve's going to give us the proper pronunciation, aren't you, Steve?
Well, I was told on day one when Ovi was launched, I pronounced it Ovi somewhere, and I had some incensed people from Finland saying, no, it's Ovi. And I got so told off and burned, I've remembered ever since. But that is the correct pronunciation.
Yes, because after all, Ovi comes from the Finnish for door. And I think one of the things Nokia did pretty well at Nokia World was actually they explained it in one sentence better than I've seen it before. And that was, Ovi is a dashboard to your life. And I think that's quite a nice way of putting it. It's integrating all the disparate components of software and services that you do on a mobile, but also making sure you can use them over the web and the PC. So Ovi is the dashboard to your life. We'll obviously be coming back to Ovi again. There'll be stuff on the site about it from Nokia World. And it's something I'm sure we'll be discussing a lot more in the coming year. But moving on from Nokia World, I know we've got another topic to discuss today, and that's firmware upgrades. And Steve's been thinking a little bit about this, so take it away, Steve.
Okay, it was a comment from one of our forum members that complained about that I was talking about, hey, the N95's got this new V20 firmware, and a week before, the N95 8GB's got this new V11 firmware. And in each case, one of the forum members said, but the each device's OS should be updated as you go in the same manner as Windows on a desktop. The sheer hassle, hours of work to back up, update, risk bricking your phone, bring it back up, restore, reinstall the bits you didn't restore, re-enter email passwords, server settings, change menus. And a lot of the time for a major firmware update, it's a bad practice to do this anyway because you don't want to mix up old and new OS system files, which means it takes even longer. The alternative with patch upgrade files a la Windows continuously applied sounds tempting. After all, we all know how wonderfully stable and resilient Windows is. But consider the following scenario. The user phones up Nokia or his network operator. Yes, my phone's doing strange things. Help! Okay, what version is your firmware? Well, it was. I've been adding the patches you keep auto-installing, but I deinstalled the one from March because it messed up my GPS, and I didn't like the one in April. And the one from last Tuesday caused my N98 to freeze, so I power cycled and then I deleted a few things. So, I'm not really sure. And the text guy says, well, I'm sorry, I've no idea what's wrong in that case. It could be one of 100 things. Can you bring it into a Nokia service center and leave it with us for a few days? At least with the current system, the OS in each smartphone gets upgraded in discrete steps. And at any point, it's easy for the user and the support guy in real time to get immediately back to the last working step by simply hard resetting the device to the last base step, e.g. V10, V11. At that point, the phone will either work fine, in which case the user just has to worry about resyncing their PIM data and entering any settings, or it won't, in which case it's the hardware that's failed and it's a clear-cut case of a warranty repair or replacement. Both approaches do have their pros and cons, but I can quite see the point of Nokia and other phone manufacturers like Sony Ericsson and Motorola in going down the simpler, stepped path and avoiding the support mess in the PC world in which almost every single fault on every single Windows computer needs an expert friend or colleague to come in into your home or office to delve into the OS and fix it in person because the system's just too darn complicated to sort out over the phone. So I can see both from both ends. What about you guys?
Ewan, have you got any particular feelings on firmware upgrades?
Yeah, I'll pick up this one here. I think we're going to stay with this stepped approach simply because of the support cost. Remember, the support cost is normally borne by the network operators. And if there's too, I mean, there have been cases in the US where too many support calls led to people being removed from one of the networks and their contracts cancelled. It's an incredibly high cost, and it really does hit the ARPU any time you have to make a support call, even if it's only for 5 or 10 minutes into a network handset. So I think the pressure from the networks will say we don't want the old-fashioned way of, you know, you have the operating system, we can patch this, we can run each individual application with the version numbers as well. Obviously, that's the very geeky way. It's the tech way, and it's the way we would love, but it's in the real world, it's not profitable. And follow the money. So that's why at a base level, I think it's not going to happen. The second reason I think that we're going to stay with the stepped approach is simply because it is done in one go. It's just in, plug the cable in. There's a small window where you might break your phone. But, you know, I'd love to hear from people who actually have bricked the phone in the upgrade process. I'd like to know how robust it actually is. And it's there, it's done, everything's updated in one sweep. Yes, this should be a better backup system. The idea that you have to reload your PIM settings and then put your own settings back in yourself, I think it's completely abhorrent to the idea of backup. And, yep, there we go. I think we really have to lump it. I mean, remember, Steve and Rafe, you both remember what it was like 2-3 years ago when we couldn't upgrade over there. We had to go into a service center. And at that point, the service, you know, one of the big problems that networks had was people were breaking their phones to get the latest version of the software on a warranty exchange. So I think what we have now is a very good balance between giving the user the right to update their phone, even if it's just to a new Orange or Vodafone firmware, and also the sort of locking down and preventing too much messing around that you get from a network.
Yes, I agree. I mean, I think the thing about firmware is to realize it's far from a simple matter. With different versions of the firmware for different operators in different countries, there's actually multiple versions floating around. And so creating a sort of stepwise approach wouldn't necessarily be economically viable. I think the other thing to remember about firmware updates is it remains, relatively speaking, the preserve of the top-end users. I imagine there are a lot of people who buy a phone and then will never upgrade the firmware on their machine, either because they're completely happy with what they've got or they're intimidated by the thought of plugging it into a PC and running through the install process. I think actually the problem with the firmware upgrades at the moment is, as both you guys have touched on, the fact that the backup isn't good enough, and I can't see why it wouldn't be possible to do a firmware upgrade, which after all is just writing over the Z drive, which is the ROM of the phone rather than the C or the memory card drives, why we couldn't preserve some more of the settings during upgrade. I accept that some things have to go as applications change or system files change, but there's no reason why access points should disappear, or indeed podcast subscriptions, or a variety of other things. At the very least, though, some of the things that are not backed up by the current backup onto the memory card or backup to PC suite should be backed up, so that it's a realistic proposition to restore a backup between firmware versions, which at the moment is a bit hit and miss in terms of whether it will work or make your phone unstable. So what I'd like to see is, I think the current process works fine with going up from major versions one at a time, but I'd like to see a better backup regime, or in an ideal world, something that preserves your applications and settings when you actually do upgrade the firmware, and whether that works by some kind of automatic backup or whether it just leaves things untouched, I don't really mind. The only other thing I'd introduce here is there's a technology called FOTA, which stands for firmware over the air, and this really is over the air, and that means over the cellular network, and it is possible to update the software on a phone via a network operator connection. And indeed, this has been done with some of the handsets in the States, the N75 being one example of this. And you'll probably recall when you do a software update, it downloads 150 megabytes. Now, clearly, that's not something that's going to be sustainable over an operator network. Even with a 3G connection, you can't guarantee the connection is going to stay there long enough. So my understanding of firmware over the air, which is supported by S60 third edition feature pack 1, and there's better support coming in feature pack 2, is it downloads just the bits it needs to and rewrites just the bits it needs to, and there are some obviously technical issues involved on the back end with how you write the firmware and the sort of the software side of things, but that kind of technology I'd like to see come in and be a lot more prevalent, so that software gets updated automatically on people's phones without them even having to do anything at all. So for example, if there's a bug found in the web browser or something like that, it's updated, you know, at night when you don't even realize it's doing it automatically. And I think that kind of software upgrade is the future, because not only would that get the sort of techie geeks, it would also get all the ordinary people who wouldn't necessarily upgrade their firmware otherwise. But it, you know, can derive value from getting the latest software. Now, in particular, what's interesting here is operators could potentially offer new software and services via this method. So, for example, if they've come up with a new messaging service, I don't know, maybe the ability to take a photograph and then send it as a postcard to your friends or something similar to that, or video sharing is available in Italy on the TIM network. If they could add the software to do that, they'd actually be adding new functionality to the phone, and this would be good for a couple of reasons. Not only does it provide the end user with more value, from the operator's perspective, it actually stops the user thinking, I want to buy a new phone because I want to play about with some new features. So it's a way of reducing operator churn, and that's the term for people either upgrading their handset or switching to another network in order to access new features. So this firmware over the air, I believe, is the future, but it's not going to come in just yet, and it's certainly not going to be a universal thing for a while. So in the meantime, I'd like to see Nokia work on improving the way software update works, so that the backup is actually really a true backup and you can restore it to it between firmware versions. I accept there's never going to be a perfect solution, but to me it's pretty unrealistic that you have to reinstall your applications, because that's something that could be solved pretty easily if Nokia put their minds to it, even if it meant keeping the sys file somewhere during the installation process, or just backing up those particular bits and saying, right, anything that's an application we can back up and restore, because that's not going to be a problem on the whole between firmware versions. So that's my personal take on it, because I do find it very irritating, and I avoid doing firmware upgrades unless I really have to on devices that I've customized a lot. And something like the N95 firmware, which was a really big upgrade and added a lot of features and was by far and away the most worthy firmware upgrade I can recall for the last couple of years, you did want to do it, but there's a certain inertia because of the pain involved. So, I mean, handing it back to you guys, I mean, what do you think of that? See, first of all, I guess.
Yeah, I have to say that I think the PC Suite backup is getting slightly better. I agree it's got a long way to go, and that there are still things that it doesn't back up, and that's especially things like email settings. and the positions of your icons in the startup menus. But from version to version, PC Suite is improving, and there are quite a few people who went to V20 on the N95 from V12, which is, you think, from the numbering version alone would be a huge step, and it is in terms of the functionality they changed and added. And they went using the standard PC Suite backup and restore with no problems and not having to re-enter that much. Now, I'm an older and wiser chap, and I do tend to, like you guys, and I tend to wipe every device clean with the firmware and use that as an opportunity to test my backup routine and also have a good old spring clean of all my files and applications. But the average user, I think that even with the current backup and restore, they wouldn't have that much of a problem. And also, don't forget, we intend to install masses and masses of stuff, so there's more and more stuff to get riled about. The average user, they probably do a backup restore. It puts their phone numbers in and their calendar entries and a few of their photos, and they're happy. So it's not perhaps quite such a problem. One other thing that's worth mentioning is that the way Apple do their firmware updates for their iPhone, which is that when you plug your iPhone, or in this case, this would be your smartphone for Nokia, into your PC, it actually goes off, checks the firmware, and says, there is a new update available. Do you wish to apply it now? And it takes you through the whole process in a wizard-like fashion. Nothing gets lost, and it's all totally automatic, and it's all as soon as you next plug it into your PC. And with people plugging their smartphones into the PC more and more for the music, as we mentioned earlier, I can see that this will be a way to go until we get such a time as we get Photo working fully over the air, and they work out all the little ways of patching the OS and get that working.
Oh, I absolutely agree, and it's interesting to see in the latest version of the N-Series PC Suite, which is currently available via Nokia Beta Labs, it will periodically check the firmware version on your phone and let you know if there is a new update. So Nokia is starting to go that way. It's not quite yet as seamless as Apple, but it's certainly well on the way, and I agree, for most people, the backup's not a problem. One particular area that I know people have issues with, if your application is unsigned, or rather it's not simple, being signed, which quite a large number of applications still are, especially if they're not using the sensitive APIs, those applications won't actually automatically reinstall after a backup or after a firmware upgrade, whereas Symbian signed applications will. So just a note for users that if you're looking to get the right applications back in again, it's actually most likely to be the unsigned applications, which are typically more often not freeware, that might be causing the trouble. So that's just a tip for you if you're upgrading the firmware. I mean, Ewan, have you got any more comments on this issue?
I think we've covered most of the bases there. But one thing to point out, Steve, was although you lose the icons and programs from your C drive, once you reinstall the application again, the system screen going from 12 to 20 does remember where the application was before and puts it up. So there's some sort of shadow somewhere that does remember that position. So I do know that this time when I upgraded the N95, I didn't have to move my icons around. I just had to remember to reinstall all the applications.
So it seems we're well on the way, but there's definitely room for improvement. I think it's the final issue in this podcast. I know Steve just mentioned the iPhone and the software update, and I believe there's an update for the iPhone coming, Steve, as our outside of Symbian segment. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, Apple do seem to be taking their time in releasing updates for the iPhone. When it was released back in July, having been announced in January, you thought, right, come July, it's been released. Every week there's going to be a new little feature they shove in over the air. There's going to be this feature. Then by Christmas, it'll be up to sort of, you know, N95 standards. It's been quite surprising how slow they've been. But having said that, they are getting there. This weekend there's an update coming out which adds voice recording, dictaphone, and also mass storage mode so that you can use the iPhone 8 gigabyte memory as a disk drive on your computer. So that's probably worth most of the iPhone owners out there upgrading. I'm sure that either the new version will be jailbreaked and hacked like all the other versions have been over the weeks and months. I think Apple are getting there. The interesting thing in the iPhone world, and for us to keep our eye on it from other spheres of the mobile world, is what will happen in January. I think there's the Apple's big annual event, and that's when Steve Jobs announced the original iPhone. I suspect it's pretty much a certainty he's going to announce the iPhone 2, and quite what the feature set of that will be a major, major talking point for all of us in January, February, in the next 3 or 4 Insights time.
I agree. I mean, especially given that there's an SDK also due to come out, and we don't really have any details on quite how open that's going to be. And what I mean by that is how deeply the application can integrate into the phone software. So far, the speculation is it's going to be rather like Java, which is considerably less powerful than the Symbian native applications, which are written, of course, in C++. I do think it's interesting that Apple have received quite a bit of credit for upgrading the iPhone as it goes. And certainly, they've got closer by adding extra features in. I still think it's a considerable distance behind just in terms of basic features. There are the obvious hardware issues aside. But it's interesting, Nokia has actually added quite a few things in, for example, in the N95 firmware update, and we've heard far less critical comment on that. So I think it's interesting to see this pattern of more features coming available via firmware updates, and I can only say I hope it's something we see more of in the future.
Absolutely.
So I think we've almost gone over time for this week's All About Insight. I'd like to thank you all for listening. As ever, we'd be interested in hearing your feedback. You can either do that via the contact form on the website or email me at rafe@allaboutsymbian.com. We've missed out our software section this week, but we'll bring you a double helping next time round. So from me in Sussex, it's goodbye.
And from me up in Edinburgh, it's goodbye.
And goodbye from me in Reading.
Thanks, guys, and thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the All About Symbian podcast, www.allaboutsymbian.com. Copyright 2007.